2 days after the end of the Second World War, 42 defenseless men, women, and children are lined up to be shot. Their moment of execution is captured in this rare home movie. Their only crime is that they happen to speak German. Their murder is part of a little-known story about the fate of millions of ethnic Germans after the war. They are the casualties of a peace that will prove anarchic, vengeful, and bloody. Victory celebrations and dancing in the streets. The traditional images we associate with the end of the Second World War. In reality, peace was a violent and chaotic process. For the defeated Germans, peace meant dislocation.
Don't mess with Mr. in between.
It meant revenge.
You got to spread
and rape.
To the maximum, bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith.
It meant the ethnic cleansing of over 12 million Germans living in Eastern Europe.
Man, they said we better accept.
And the deaths of over 500,000 of them. The nature of the war, the scale of its violence, aimed as much at civilians as soldiers, and the enormity of the hatreds unleashed, meant there was little chance that the bloodletting would end when the fighting finished. Small wonder German soldiers had joked, "Enjoy the war, for the peace will be savage."
Jeden Abend steh ich an der Brücke und verkaufe Blumen an mein Liebespaar.
Germans call it their zero hour. The country lay in ruins, literally and morally. 26 million Germans had lost their homes. A third of all German children had lost their fathers. It was a land of old men, women, and children. Sixteen-year-old Berliner Christa Ronka kept a diary throughout 1945.
The war is lost. I went into the city again and was shocked to see so many ruins and the large number of women trying to rebuild everything. And then I got dysentery. It spread in Berlin. I must be very careful and only drink boiled water. Around midday, I saw three soldiers in strange uniform. The first Russians. Stalin had reportedly allowed his soldiers to do anything for 3 days as a reward for taking Berlin. There were rumors that the Russians raped women. And well, that's how it was. The first Russians banged on the door. And then the next Russian, he dragged me straight away onto the sofa. And as I fought back, he showed me the gun. It was terrible. It was over quickly, thank God. And I was glad to be back alive with my mother. And then it went on like that. The other women in the house were raped too.
Other children witnessed rape at close quarters.
We had hatten alle Angst.
We were all scared. We were all scared. And around 5 in the morning, the first Russians arrived. They wanted watches. And we sat in the cellar for the whole day. And then at night, the house was burning, and we all had to get out. And our nanny took me by the hand, and my mother took both my brothers and the little suitcase I had, and nothing else. And then our nanny was raped by the Russians, and she didn't let go of my hand throughout what happened in the cellar. And when we came out, it was night. There was nothing. It was dark. Everything was burning. I can't. It was upsetting. I don't know what I thought, but thank God it's over.
But it wasn't over. Now 10-year-old Marianne Becker's mother was kidnapped and subjected to a mass rape by Russian soldiers.
My mother was driven to Sopot. There was an aeroplane hangar there, and the women were raped there 24 hours a day in front of the children. And my mother kept on saying, "We have to return to Danzig. We have to."
Well over 2 million German women and children were raped at the end of the war. Many of them died or killed themselves as a result. Peace brought dislocation too. It seemed like all of Europe was on the march. A tidal wave of nomad people looking for the long road home. All displaced by a war that was as much about race as territory. Unsurprisingly, it was Eastern Europe, whose ethnic tensions Hitler had exploited in his move towards war, that witnessed the worst peacetime violence. Liberation cast Germans in the unfamiliar role of victim. These pictures show a group of German soldiers in Czechoslovakia after they have surrendered. Many of them have been beaten to death by partisans. Such brutal reprisals seemed unimaginable only a few weeks earlier. Prague, shortly before liberation. Known as a cushy posting for Nazi officers, it had experienced a relatively quiet war, like much of the rest of the country. The smiling faces of liberation belie the savagery of the revenge Czechoslovaks are about to wreak on their country's substantial German-speaking minority. The ethnic Germans, many of whose families have lived here in Eastern Europe for centuries.
Czechs treated the Germans so badly. They were catching them and shooting them. Something I saw appalled me so much that I said I would never want to live in this country again. There were isolated groups of Germans, and they carved swastikas into their flesh and rubbed salt into the wounds.
As
I saw German women paving the street because they were dismantling the barricade, and they had swastikas painted on their backs, and a former concentration camp inmate was in charge of them. I saw horrible things. There were places where the Germans sat, exhausted, their clothes ripped off, and they, the Czechs, were sticking pins into their breasts. It was shocking.
And
I went on to the station, and I saw a dead body hanging by a rope in Vodokova Street. I remember how I ran up to my cousin and said, I never want to live here again. It's terrible what's happening out there. I can remember it very well. I'll never forget it.
Izzy Mernicek, a civil engineer and keen amateur photographer, on his wedding day. He took his 8mm camera everywhere with him.
It's made in Germany by Siemens, and Dad bought it when he was young, before his wedding. So his friend filmed his wedding on this camera.
2 days after VE Day, he filmed a drama unfolding outside his own front door. Those wearing armbands are Czechoslovak Revolutionary Guards.
He started rounding up Germans and Hans Pulka and Davids and bringing them over here. You can see them in the film, how they march them, drive them up the hill towards the Borislavka cinema. They locked them in the cinema, and then they took them out. About 42 people in front of the cinema, onto Kladensko Street, and then they shot them dead there.
A stills photographer was also there that day.
They shot a lot of them dead. It was really bad because those who organized it wanted to have it photographed and came to my father and asked him to take photos. My father didn't know what was going on, and when he came back he was totally devastated. Devastated, and his nerves were shot through. And my mother had to nurse him for the rest of the day.
But it was happening everywhere. There were a lot of cases like this. I was there with my parents and my grandma. My grandma turned around and hid my head in her apron because one action was quite extreme. The nasty moment when lorries arrive and drive over their legs, which is really horrible.
Izzy Mernicek films one victim praying in his final moments.
You can see in the film how they had to dig their own graves. Not all of them were German. There were people who just spoke German. I think a Swedish family were there.
I despair that things like that could happen here in our country. Put simply, there are also good Germans, or rather, there are more good Germans than bad ones.
Such murders remain unpunished. The Czechoslovak government issued an amnesty for all just reprisals carried out before 28th of October 1945. No one has ever been convicted for what happened here in Mirosov Castle. These stills show the treatment of German prisoners of war awaiting transportation to Germany. Czech partisans force the soldiers to strip, beat each other, and dig their own graves. The German prisoners are executed before their bodies are disposed of in a mass grave in the castle garden. Over 200 Germans died at this camp. Such methods deliberately mirror those used by the Nazis, whose leader casts a long shadow over all ethnic Germans. Germans in Brno enthusiastically greet the arrival of Adolf Hitler. Unlike most Czechoslovaks, they view his takeover of the country as a liberation, not an occupation. Even young children get caught up in the atmosphere of the occasion.
I was 6 years old. I pushed to the front row. I pushed in front of the SS. They stood in double rows. They fenced off the entire population with ropes when Hitler drove past. He came to the town hall in an open car, and we stood in front of the town hall. I saw when the car drove past. A man with arm raised. Goodness, goodness. Someone important. But who would have guessed that this was Hitler? And the people with all the flags and Heil, of course. Fanfares up on the roof. For a child, that was an adventure.
Three years later, Hugo Fritsch was so keen to join the junior section of the Hitler Youth that he lied about his age.
I was exhilarated because I had joined, and in the first summer we went to this summer camp at a castle, a palatial castle that the Nazis had seized. So we sang this back then.
Unsere Fahne flattert uns voran, in die Zukunft ziehen wir Mann für Mann.
Wir marschieren für Hitler, durch Land und durch Dorf, mit der Fahne der Jugend für Freiheit.
Unsere Fahne flattert uns voran.
Until almost the end of the war, everything seemed normal for 12-year-old Hugo.
I can remember it was as late as 1945 when I was still running around with the Czech boys. Everyone had a toy gun that they fired in the air. Well, we ran through the streets and played war.
With the declaration of peace, Ethnic German civilians, now overwhelmingly old men, women and children like Hugo, are targeted.
They had this huge loudspeaker announcement that the Czech Republic was declared and that the people will take revenge in particular on collaborators and on the German people here. Right in the marketplace, all the signs written in German had been torn down, broken, destroyed. It was death, death, death to the Germans, death to the collaborators. On these low trees, all these life-sized dolls were hung with a noose around their necks. They had sashes on them, so just like a sash for the winner of a beauty competition. They had a collaborator sash on them. I mean, it was very scary for us.
Victims of the Gestapo were exhumed from the grounds of Konitz College. During the war, it had been a Nazi prison. Now, ethnic Germans were incarcerated here.
I heard one of the guards say to the other, even though he didn't say it very loudly, "Only kill a third of them. We do need some people for work."
One day, 16-year-old Emil Pupik, a former member of the Hitler Youth interned in Konitz College, was ordered to help build a gallows.
We had to collect the gallows from the cellar first. And then they showed us where it should be. Three gallows, that is. When we had finished that, they said, "Now we have to try it out." Therefore, we'll hang someone so we can see if it has been well made. And they selected someone for hanging. And another of them came up and said, "Why just one? We have three gallows, so we should hang three." And so I was the second one chosen to be hanged, and then there was a third. The rope we already had round our necks. My wish was to die as quickly as possible. They were still busy with the third man, thank God. And we already had our hands tied behind our backs and the rope around our necks. And a Czech guy came running up and shouted, "Clear everything away, clear everything away. There's an inspection from Prague." And quickly enough, they cut the rope. And we were chased into the house.
The site of the three gallows at Konitz College. In May and June, at least 300 Germans were killed here. Public executions, like that of the notorious Sudeten Nazi Karl Frank, hanged for mass murder, pulled in the crowds. The visceral manner of his death reinforced a policy of national cleansing of all Germans and deterred opposition. The Czechoslovak pole hanging method, with its short drop, causes death by strangulation. The prisoner goes limp as the blood flow to the brain is reduced. Although it takes at least 10 minutes to die. This amateur footage shows one of at least 1,000 public executions carried out by self-styled people's tribunals in the weeks after the war. Trials could take as little as 5 minutes, and executions were carried out within 2 hours of sentencing. Age was no barrier to persecution. Konitz College housed prisoners as young as 6 years old.
They were about 6 years old, the little ones, and the eldest was about 11. And they had to jump up like soldiers, all at the same time. And then sit down again, like stand up, sit again. And some of them, particularly the little ones, they couldn't do it. So they called one boy over and hit him with a belt. Then he cried. It was awful.
Some did.
What had the children? How could someone be so sadistic? It was terrible. Children, they can't defend themselves. What have they ever? They couldn't have done anything. Such little children.
But disease, not violence, was the biggest killer. 14-year-old Hugo Fritsch and his family were interned in a former SS training camp. With little food, no doctor, and no medicine.
Grandmother died first, then my brother died, Gerhard. And then my mother died rather quickly. And I went to see my father almost every day, and then he died suddenly. His heart stopped working. So father died suddenly. We had all these deaths from January to February. It wasn't even 2 months during which they all died. For me, the darkest memory is always my mother's burial, because I was a mother's boy. For me, that was the worst. Because even until today, I can't, because I still have the images. I did push them aside, but they came back in my later years. And how? That is bad. You see, I spent my entire life making sure I started a family, because I didn't have one of my own anymore.
Most Czechoslovaks were more concerned with the heroes of war than the orphans of peace. A victory parade in Prague of the Czechoslovak First Army Corps. Their battle-hardened troops who had fought against the Germans under Soviet leadership. Some of them are involved in the peacetime murder of German civilians. This rural hop-growing community in Czechoslovakia's Sudetenland, where Germans had lived for centuries, was the setting for the second largest atrocity in post-war Europe. 16-year-old Peter Klepsch, who had opposed the Nazis and ended the war in prison, was one of 5,000 ethnic Germans, men and boys, ordered to the town square in Jatetz.
We were already under the impression that the Czechs had gone completely crazy. There were spontaneous executions, people pulled out and shot. I still remember a friend of mine. He said, "I was a German officer. I want to be treated differently. There is still the Geneva Convention," or something like that. He was shot on the spot, and other people I knew. They were whipped in public.
The Germans were interned at the army barracks in Postelopreté. On the third day, five boys, aged between 12 to 15, were caught absconding to steal fruit. Policeman Bohuslav Marek wanted the boys flogged, but a Czech army captain ordered them to line up against the barracks wall.
Oh, it was so horrible. They begged for their lives and screamed for their mothers. And then they were just bumped off like cattle. They stood there facing the muzzles of the rifles. And if you didn't die immediately, they fired again. To me, it was very distressing. One boy was shot in the throat, then his blood spurted out with the last beat of his heart. A stream of blood came out. They were buried in the barracks yard by me, among others. And for me, that was actually the worst thing.
Many of the dead were buried in a mass grave at this pheasant farm. Altogether, 2,000 Sudeten Germans were murdered in just 5 days in June.
Well, I certainly saw it as genocide. They just let out their inner bastard on these defenseless people. That was clear.
It took decades to get this small memorial to the killings erected in the teeth of local Czech opposition.
I can say that what happened here in 45 is no different at all to the Third Reich. The morals of these people who did this, they were the same.
Local Germans are forced to confront the horrors of the Third Reich. A lampshade made of human skin, human organs in jars, and half a severed head. Notions of collective guilt and punishment for such atrocities meant that few were prepared to contemplate the idea of Germans as victims, especially in countries that had borne the brunt of Nazi atrocities. Warsaw, like much of Poland, lies in ruins after the war. Amidst such bleak reminders of the price of Nazi occupation, the Poles now targeted the almost 6 million Germans living inside the country. Secret footage of a Nazi concentration camp in Poland, shot at great personal risk during the war. In 1945, the Poles used such camps to incarcerate Germans, often under similar conditions. The Gates of Zgoda. Once a satellite camp of Auschwitz, it was reopened by the Poles as a punishment camp. And you could be punished simply for being German. The 26-year-old Jewish commander of the camp was Colonel Solomon Morel of the Polish secret police.
He introduced himself to us on the first night. My name is Solomon Morel, and I'm the commandant of this camp. I was with the partisans. My parents were gassed in Auschwitz by you Germans.
Fourteen-year-old Dorota Boryczek, from a wealthy Polish family, was incarcerated with German prisoners.
I thought we were going to be shot there and then, because Morel received us saying, "Come here, you Hitlerite whores. You will remember this forever. And once you have experienced Zgoda, you will think of Auschwitz as a kindergarten in comparison."
In one bizarre punishment in the camp, Morel forced the 14-year-old Gerhard Gruszka and other prisoners to sing Nazi songs.
Then there was an order that he gave. I thought, I'm in a fantasy world. To sing the Horst Wessel song? I can still hear it today, even his tone. Horst Wessel song, sing, quick! I thought, they know the Horst Wessel song? It was basically the second national anthem. I thought, this can't be true. And the ones who'd been there longer struck up straight away. The flag on high, I sang along too.
Für Freiheit, für Zynismus und für Brot bricht an.
Morel personally fostered a culture of sadism.
Die Methode Pyramide war eben so.
The pyramid method was when four were thrown next to each other, and four then diagonally on top of them, and then another four, until they were quite high. And then not always, but every so often, the militia climbed on top and they danced on the prisoners. No one came away from this unharmed, and people died.
I wanted to force my mother to commit suicide. Men took their lives by hanging, and women by walking into the electric fence.
Prisoners were deliberately denied food and medical care in order to bring about their deaths.
Is it okay if I cry?
This time of hunger was horrific. They waited at the gate for fresh corpses, and there were cases. It was not habitual, but people ate dead bodies, yes. Corpses, they waited for fresh ones. I saw it.
Almost a third of the 6,000 Germans sent to Zgoda died here.
A funeral went like this. The prisoners dug a hole in the ground and threw these bodies into it. They spread the lime and sand on top of it. and then they were told to dance on the bodies and piss on them.
Three quarters of a million Germans were imprisoned in a massive range of often secret camps stretching across Eastern Europe. Some 60,000 Germans died in camps like Poland's Goda.
Yes, hell. I went through hell. And I should love such a nation? When I look at these criminals, I feel like chopping them to pieces and feeding them to ravenous dogs. I hate them so much.
Country sports stadiums were a traditional setting for revenge. They were used as prisons, torture chambers, and places of execution. On the morning of June the 9th, 1945, 8,000 German men and boys were summoned to their local stadium in Chomutov.
We were all herded together and had to take our tops off. They were looking for tattoos or SS markings. There was a tattoo on the upper arm with the blood group sign. And those who had it, between 15 and 20, 22 of them.
Meinung sagt, es waren 15, andere sagen, es waren 20 oder 22. Diese Männer wurden herausgeworfen.
These men were hauled out and beaten to death. Yeah, to death. Killed right in front of everyone.
Ja, zu Tode gebracht vielleicht. Es waren dann eben auch tschechische Zivilisten, die mit Eisenstangen oder Holz.
It was also Czech civilians who beat the SS soldiers with iron bars and wooden clubs. And if they collapsed and didn't move, a bucket of salt water was thrown over them. And when they'd revived a little, they were then beaten again until they were dead. So there was a pile of dead people, some lying on top of each other, that we had to march past. And we were given the command, eyes left, so that we had to look at them as we marched past.
Hitler's image, now an object of open desecration, was used to humiliate the Germans in the stadium.
It was at the beginning of this whole orgy. There was someone said to be a party member from a mountain village. There was a big Hitler poster. That is a very big Hitler poster that he carried in front of him. And he was made to shout over and over again, we thank our Führer, we thank our Führer, until he came up to the Czechs and was beaten until he collapsed. Then the whole column had to run around holding the picture up and shouting, we thank our Führer. That was the thing to say at gatherings in the Nazi period.
Horst Thiemel now experienced another favorite Nazi device adopted by Czechoslovaks, the forced death march.
Das Ganze ist letztlich.
It was a forced march. A forced march that was demanded of everyone. If you couldn't keep up and lagged behind and couldn't go on, you were shot. To be precise, you were first beaten up and then shot. 75 men lost their lives.
Those Germans not arrested were forced to wear white armbands and were subject to anti-German decrees, some of them still on the statute book today. Then they were expelled en masse. Entire communities were rounded up at a moment's notice. Here, the table hasn't been cleared. Up to 3.5 million people were stripped of their citizenship, homes and property, and denied compensation. Britain, America, and the Soviet Union ordered the expulsions as part of a plan to reshape the ethnic composition of Eastern Europe and to punish Germany, which now lost a quarter of its territory. At Potsdam, the Allies spoke of orderly and humane population transfers, but they turned a blind eye to the catastrophic consequences of a policy they had connived at. Soon the roads and railways of Eastern Europe were filled with Germans on the move. Overcrowded trains, of the sort previously used to take the Jews to their fate, were filled with the dead and dying, the sick and starving. This 11-year-old German girl expellee weighed only 31 pounds on her arrival. This girl's lower limbs are swollen from hunger edema. Over 12 million Germans were expelled from Eastern Europe, the largest known example of ethnic cleansing in history. Over 250,000 died in the process. The writer George Orwell called it an enormous crime. The River Oder marked the new German-Polish border. The 6 million Germans living east of the Oder were forcibly expelled as Eastern Germany became Western Poland.
We lost everything. We meet once a month and we bring something about East Prussia. That is our homeland and we won't forget it. We think about the dark forests, the elks, the farmers ploughing and the flocks of birds that fly, or the many storks that there are in East Prussia.
Towards the end of the war, as the Russians approached her hometown of Goldap, 9-year-old Marianne Becker fled with her family to Danzig. There she faced months of starvation.
Winter 1945, it was a very cold winter. I always collected water for the family and for us. One of my deepest memories is that we always had to clamber over corpses and a dead horse. We were all scared. We didn't know what would happen to us. We barely had anything to eat. And then my little brother got sick. He got diphtheria. We didn't have a doctor. Nothing at all. You could only give him a hot potato. And he died aged 5. He was buried in the front garden in a checkered blanket that my mother had saved from our house.
In the autumn of 1947, Marianne was finally expelled from what Poland now called its recovered territories.
And then we travelled from Rustenburg in the cattle wagon, 10 days, 43 people, very many dead people. And it was a difficult time. We were de-loused, vaccinated and all the rest. But we survived it.
This film is an official search for the parents of Germany's lost children. This 2-year-old doesn't know her own name.
Christiane Körber aus Danzig. Meine Mutter hat sich vergiftet und mein Vater war zuletzt auf Fehler auf einem Kriegsschiff.
25,000 children lost their parents, along with their homeland. Joachim Dietz was found in a cardboard box in the Brunnenstrasse in Berlin. 5-year-old Wolfgang Kremer was found in a forest with his 4-year-old brother. His wrists had been slit. When the Russians advanced into East Prussia, 10-year-old Sieglinde Kentzler and her family fled westwards through the icy landscape.
And in the snowy fields lay what looked to me like dolls. But in reality, they were children who died but couldn't be buried because it just wasn't possible.
Sieglinde and her siblings were then imprisoned by the Russians in a crowded cell, without their mother.
Also, die Menschen haben gestanden, da konnte keiner sitzen.
Everyone stood, no one could sit, and we had a washing basket with us, not a very big one, and inside lay our 1-year-old brother. We placed the basket down, and the people there, older people, they sat on the basket. Naturally, we called out, but it was not a nice experience. Without our mum, we shouted out, "Our baby is in there," and I still don't know if he was squashed or starved, but in any case, he died. And then, I still remember, we asked the question, do we have to stay in the room and die?
In fact, the next to die was Sieglinde's mother in a Russian internment camp. Her 4 children had to dig the grave and bury her body themselves.
We said we'll take everything we have, the sheets, her coats. We'll swaddle her all up and bury her in the cemetery at Velau. First, we went to the cemetery on our own and dug a hole.
So, and
So then we laid her out, and my brother Uli and my sister Irmgard. We had picked some flowers on the way, just daisies and buttercups, what we could find. And then my brother said, "You hold on there, and we'll lower her down, okay?" That was it. And then we said, "That's our mum." That's how it was.
Faced with certain starvation in East Prussia, Sieglinde and her siblings were among 5,000 lost German children who made their way to the forests of Lithuania. Here they had to fend for themselves, like wild animals.
We were called wolf children, the children of East Prussia. Wolf children. We compared ourselves to a pack of wolves. We always stayed together. There were farmers who cursed us, threw water over us, or set their dogs on us. "You Hitler swine" was another insult we received. We didn't know how to brush our teeth, wash properly. We had no change of clothes. We went barefoot. We said our prayers in the evening, and then we always heard the howling of wolves. Hopefully we'll stay alive. And then we slept in the open air.
Eventually, Sieglinde lost contact with her siblings. 8 years later, some 12 years after the end of the war, she was finally reunited with them in East Germany.
Let's just say I had to end my childhood very early.
Today, expellees like those in this film and their descendants form a quarter of the German population. Yet their story, which helped define post-war Germany, remains largely unknown outside the country. Peace always has a dark side. And what happened after liberation throws the spotlight on the moral compass of the victors. When ethnic Germans became objects of violence after the war, many saw, but few were interested. The largest ethnic cleansing in history, sanctioned by the victorious Allies, remains an atrocity hidden in plain sight.